Chapter 6. It was a happy and festive Sunday morning in the tenement, in the month of May, with brilliant sunshine everywhere, though the air was cool and fresh. The tubs were abandoned and the lines empty. Basket after basket of clean starched clothes left the tenement, usually borne aloft on the practiced heads of the coming generation. The houses cleaned and the morning work done up, the laundresses themselves appeared spick and span in spotless waists and calico skirts. In place of the coarse straw hats of work hours, the Portuguese women wore bright silk handkerchiefs, and the Brazilians a spray of flowers in their elaborately dressed hair. Not a few of the women wore light shawls over their shoulders, more for effect than comfort, as there was no real chill in the air. Men, stripped to the waist, were hitching quoits with enthusiasm. A group of Italians was sitting beneath a tree, smoking their pipes and conversing noisily. A few young children were receiving a tardy bath at the faucets, their mothers soaping them liberally, while with tightly shut eyes they wailed their protests. Martona's house was in a turmoil as the family was going out for the day. She herself shouted and shouted, and Nini shouted too, and Augusto demonstrated the progress of his mounting years by shouting louder than either of them. From every tiny kitchen came the tantalizing smell of stewing beef, and voices were lifted in song. The mouth organs sounded forth unabashed, mandolins tinkled and guitars were strung, and the boisterous trombone mounted to the dizzy heights of the scale's top notes in triumph. The opening of a novel titled A Brazilian Tenement by Aloysio Azevedo, published in May of 1926. A Sunday in the life of a town in southeastern Brazil in the 1920s. Rendering that, the washing, dressing, playing of games, and the singing and making music with mandolins, guitars, harmonicas, and take note, a boisterous trombone. That was in the 1920s. Jacob Edgar would not be surprised in reading about a day in the life of that town. In 1999, he wrote, "Music is more than just entertainment in Brazil. It is the soundtrack to a life. A constant ambience of rhythm and melody that enriches and supports the people through good times and bad. Carnaval, the bustling bacchanal every February, is an eruption of musical activity. But throughout the year, the rhythms of samba, bossa nova, MPB, música popular brasileira, borro, and countless other styles constantly are in the air. They flow from the stereos of taxis, rural boomboxes, the rusty speakers of beachside cantinas, and live impromptu jam sessions on street corners. Brazilian music springs from the cultural collision and interaction between Indians, Europeans, and Africans," he writes. "Brazil's population today reflects the mixed roots of African, Portuguese, and Indian, and nearly everyone has a bit of each in their ancestry." While the range and diversity of Brazilian music rival that of any country in the world, the best-known styles internationally are, as we have mentioned, first, samba, bossa nova, and a difficult genre to define, known as MPB. These and many other forms have had a tremendous impact on international music. Brazil rivals the United States and Cuba as one of the countries that have most influenced popular music around the world. Once again here, it's music of food and fun. Guitarist João Bosco has played a major role in the development of MPB. He first gained recognition as a composer, penning songs for famous singers. In 1972, he began releasing albums under his own name. As a child in the interior mining town of Ponte Nova, Bosco was intrigued by American rock and roll, forming a Little Richard Elvis Presley cover band when he was just 12 years old. His influences soon expanded to include the classical compositions of Villa-Lobos and the avant-garde music he heard from jazz. He loved Charlie Parker, Miles Davis, and Thelonious Monk. This tune is titled Vatapa, and it's composed by Dorival Caymmi, one of the founding fathers of Bossa Nova and MPB. The lyrics are a playful explanation of how to prepare vatapa, a traditional dish from the state of Bahia. One gets the impression that even cooks must have a good sense of rhythm in Brazil. Here are some of the lyrics. If you want vatapa, you should make it first with corn flour and palm oil. Find a woman from Bahia who knows the recipe. Put in some cashew nuts, a little bit more, hot pepper, a little bit more, peanuts, shrimp, grated coconut. When it is time to pound, salt with ginger and onions. When it's time to season, don't stop stirring so that it doesn't get lumpy. The pan is on the stove. Don't let it burn. That's a recipe for a classic dish from northeastern Brazil. The recipe here is, of course, just a pretext for celebrating comfort food and the good things in life. But it puts us in mind about what Mackenzie Lunford says. Improvisation in cooking is often viewed as a move from copying to understanding. Mastering of techniques provides a structure, you might say, much like scales do for a jazz musician, she writes, and recognizing patterns, flavor patterns across cultures, helping cooks understand how ingredients can work together. That's when real creativity can blossom in the kitchen. As we'll learn, Ryan Keberle, trombonist, composer, and educator, one of the leading voices in contemporary jazz, has been, we might say, marinating in the music of Brazil. Keberle once described the bread and butter of most jazz musicians, that is, playing in big bands, and what you absorb sitting in the middle of all that. You just develop a sense for what works and what doesn't when it comes to harmony. You're sitting next to the drums, the bass, and you're feeling the music. You're hearing the resonance of the chords and harmonies around you. All that from an interview with Jazz Times. And maybe that's something of the way Keberle has, in particular, been absorbing the sounds of MPB that we just heard, Música Popular Brasileira, Brazilian popular music. But Ryan Keberle has a voice and musical vision that is truly original, and he surrounded himself with musicians who are truly centered as performers as well. And when they meet to play, it can be magical. Transfixing, even. That's why the name of his band is just so right, Catharsis, and he will tell us why. Ryan Keberle and Catharsis return to the Cooperage Project in Honesdale this Saturday, May 2nd, for a night of jazz. We had a chance to speak with Ryan Keberle once again before the performance about his trombone and his literal travels and the travels with his trombone that he'll embark on with his mates this weekend.
Tommy Dorsey is obviously a monumental figure for the jazz world in general, but certainly for trombonists. And during his day, largely due to his notoriety on the instrument and also Glenn Miller's, the trombone was an instrument of the stars. It was an instrument that some of the biggest pop stars of that day in the 1930s played. And it's such a funny thing for me to think about now, because it couldn't be more different in 2026. In fact, If you were to do a survey of modern jazz ensembles around the world that are, say, performing at all the major festivals, the trombone, I guarantee you, would be the least represented instrument of all the standard instruments on those programs. So I certainly am trying to do my part to try and bring back the legacy that Dorsey worked so hard to develop in his day.
Now, I remember when we talked before that you didn't start with the trombone. You maybe started with, what, piano and violin?
Yeah, I started with violin, but for me, you know, talking about kind of the extension of my musical personality on an instrument, certainly the trombone is very much representative of that fact. But the piano is also a really important instrument to me, and our listeners, should they come to our show this Saturday at the Cooperage Project, will hear me play quite a bit of piano. This band in particular, Catharsis, is the ensemble where I have been able to find an opportunity to play piano the most. You know, I was trained in terms of my freelance career in New York City. I worked as an active freelance trombonist for well over a decade in the 2000s and 2010s. And I was trained on the trombone. I went to Juilliard and Manhattan School to do that. But the piano was one of my first loves. My mom's a piano teacher, and I've always continued to play the piano, but just not in a professional jazz environment. That was never, I think, because I had the trombone for that outlet, you know, and plus there's so many incredible pianists out there. I don't think I felt the need to try to contribute via that instrument, but I compose at the piano. I play the piano all the time at home. So it is an important part of my musical voice. And that's one of the things I love about this band, Catharsis, that we're on the phone to talk about our show this coming weekend.
Well, we have talked about your various ensembles. You have more than one.
I do.
What is the excitement then, as you've been telling us, with the opportunity to use the piano with this ensemble? What else? What would you say is so exciting for you about playing with the musicians in Catharsis?
Well, the two musicians, this is a trio iteration. Catharsis was born as a quartet, and for many years we played as a quintet, but recently we've been performing as a trio. In fact, we just did a tour of Japan a few months ago as a trio, and we're loving that configuration. And my two bandmates are, no exaggeration, two of the greatest in the world on their instruments. And talk about extensions of musical personalities. There's no greater example on the acoustic bass than my bassist in the band, Jorge Roeder. He is an utter virtuoso on the instrument and just can make it sing and plays it in so many different ways, as a guitar, as a melodic voice, as a more traditional bass role. He is just an incredible musician, so folks don't want to miss that. And then my guitarist and vocalist, she does both amazingly, is a leader of our generation on the guitar. I mean, she makes all the global polls as a jazz guitarist and one of the leading voices on that instrument, but she's also one of the great singers as well in jazz. So a dual threat, so to speak. Her name is Camila Mesa. So both just like individual virtuosos that folks definitely don't want to miss. The other, I think, unique thing about this band and exciting for me is that both Camila and Jorge are originally from South America. Camila's Chilean and Jorge is Peruvian. And so they bring not only their fluency in the jazz musical language, but they also bring their cultural musical heritage from their respective countries. And so we have, over the years, wound up playing a lot of South American folk music, music from people like Victor Jara and Cuchi Leguizamon, Argentinian music as well. So it's that's something I love because, you know, interestingly, when I graduated college as a jazz trombone player, for the first 10 years or so, I was playing more South American influenced music than I was jazz. And over that time, I really fell in love with the various musical cultures from that continent. And so to get to play them with the source, you know, both of these people being very much fluent in those musical languages, having grown up in those countries, is a treat for me. And I think our audience will love it as well. So there's a lot of Spanish lyric songs. We do some Brazilian music, so some Portuguese language songs as well as English language.
Didn't you go to South America yourself, though?
I did. I've gone many, many times. This is kind of parallel to playing with Camila and Jorge all these years. I also really fell in love with Brazilian music. And when I was on sabbatical for my university position for the first time, I spent a better part of a month in Brazil looking to study the role that the trombone plays in that country. The trombone is, to bring it back to the trombone, it's a bona fide folk instrument in Brazil. If you go to, say, your average Brazilian restaurant in the evening and there's a local samba band playing there, it's going to have either a clarinet, a flute, or a trombone. And to me, that, again, that's very unusual. You just don't see the trombone used that much anymore in American music. So I was interested in its role, how that came to be, learning about the way it's used and trying to learn the musical language that it plays. And while I was there doing all that, I fell in love with an entire genre of Brazilian music called MPB, which stands for Música Popular Brasileira, so popular Brazilian music. But it was a music defined by folks like Milton Nascimento and Elis Regina in the late 60s and 70s. And it's not what most Americans think when they think Brazilian music. It isn't bossa nova. It's actually much more upbeat, more influenced by popular music, by the Beatles, by South American folk music traditions, African musical traditions. And it, for me, it also represents a period in musical history when, in Brazil, some of the most sophisticated popular songs were being written. I oftentimes compare it to the 1930s in America, when you had popular songs being written by Gershwin and Richard Rodgers and Irving Berlin, Cole Porter, et cetera. It's, you know, a time when our popular music was incredibly sophisticated. And in the late 60s and 70s, it was exactly the same way in Brazil. And so I still, that's pretty much all I listen to is music from that era and genre. And so our listeners will hear it some deep influences from that world as well in my original music for Catharsis.
Do you each compose, not just you?
We do. It has become, you know, it started as a band that was a vehicle for my compositional kind of dreams. But over the years, we've started performing more and more music from Camila and Jorge. And in fact, a lot of the South American folk music that we play are songs that they've brought in, that they grew up listening to or have a lifelong love for. Also original music of both of theirs. So yeah, it's a great question. It has become more of a collective in that regard, which is fun for me. You know, it's a huge lift to start a band and to maintain its performance schedule and to find opportunities like that. But when the band starts to take on a life of its own and starts to go in direction that perhaps I never even dreamed of, and certainly am not in control of anymore, is a very exciting time. And this band is definitely in that zone these days.
Tell us how Camila plays guitar and sings. Does she do something special sometimes when she plays and sings at the same time?
Everything she does is special, and I don't just say that because she's in my band. She is a one of a kind. She can be comping, you know, accompanying herself with incredibly syncopated, you know, Brazilian rhythms, and then singing the most grounded lyrical melody on top of that. I mean, it's kind of like tapping your stomach or tapping your head and patting your stomach. You know, it's a really difficult thing to do, either of those things. She can be taking crazy jazz improvised solos on the guitar and then singing along with them in unison at the same time, improvised in the moment. Like she every single concert we play blows me away and blows the audiences away. She really is a up-and-coming star in her own right in the jazz world.
And you have always loved teaching. You're still teaching, as you suggest, aren't you, at Hunter?
I am. I'm teaching even more now than I think when we last spoke. I'm still running the program at Hunter College down in New York City. And I also started teaching at my alma mater, Manhattan School of Music, teaching private jazz trombone lessons there. And that's been really fun, not only the full circle experience for me, but getting to work with some of the most advanced young jazz trombonists in the world has been super fun and just a very different type of experience than teaching at Hunter, which I also love. So Yeah, I'm in the city at least 2, sometimes 3 days a week teaching these days. And I've been at Hunter for over 20 years, so I've seen an entire generation of young aspiring musicians come through the ranks there. And I feel very hopeful about the future of our music, for sure.
Now, it is a return visit to Wayne County for you and the Cooperage Project. Why do you come back? Do you have ties now that you've made friends back by popular demand?
Yeah, well, you know, I call my home in Forestburg, New York, in Sullivan County. So I'm not too far, not in the immediate vicinity, but certainly the same general geographical location, the Catskills, Poconos, greater region. And so now that I've been living up here, I've gotten to know some of the local arts presenters and local artists. And just kind of trying to become a part of that community here. And the Cooperage Project is absolutely at the very top of my list in terms of my favorite places to play. It's just such a wonderful organization. It's run so well, so professionally, so organized. And they do so many different things, which I love, because it seems to me, at least, that they have this regular audience that comes to all of their musical shows, regardless of what the genre is. They're not just jazz fans coming to jazz and folk music coming to folk. You know, they're music fans who love high quality live music and understandably don't get to hear it that often in such a rural area. So I feel like it's a very appreciative audience, a wonderful organization doing great things, you know, cultivating love and appreciation for art of all kinds in Wayne County. So I'm thrilled to be back. This will be my third time playing there, but the first time playing with Catharsis. And you might recall we were supposed to play there about 2 years ago, or I guess about a year and a half ago, actually, and we were ice stormed out. It was canceled because of a horrible ice storm that occurred the day before. So this is a very long kind of time coming reschedule of that show. So I'm happy to finally make it happen.
And as a musician, all of you, each of you, I think it might make sense to think about maybe Camila coming from Chile and South America, Jorge, Peru, but you all are socially conscious musicians, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that as I get older and as I travel the world performing live creative music, you know, what I've come to realize is just the simple act of creating original improvised music or just live music in general, or maybe even more broadly, art with a capital A, is in and of itself a form of protest, I think, because it helps our listeners learn to think for themselves. It helps our listeners to become better listeners, not only to music, but I think to each other. And of course, we're living in a time when that is something I think we desperately need more of. You know, it helps cultivate longer attention spans. It helps, it gives us a reason to put away our phones. And in my opinion, these devices that are kind of poisoning our minds and souls. And there are, I think, other reasons as well. But I really do think of our role as performing artists as inherently, hopefully, making the world a better place each and every time we step on stage.
One more question that we've asked you before, but people might be curious. Catharsis, the name.
Absolutely. Well, the reason I'm a musician is because of the way that music makes me feel. And I'm not talking about when I'm performing the music, of course, that all included. But for me, just listening to music, experiencing music has, looking back on my life, provided me with some of the most emotionally powerful moments and experiences that I've ever experienced. And I know that for many other people, the same can be said. And I think, so the word catharsis has to do with that emotional connection that one can have with good music, with music that tells a story, with music that bears the soul of its performer and allows the listeners to connect in different emotional ways. So that's definitely the kind of music we're trying to create with Catharsis. And, you know, hopefully our listeners will feel something when they sit down and listen to our show this Saturday.
Thank you.
trombonist Ryan Keberle. We spoke with him about his music, his trombone playing, and his ensemble Catharsis in this incarnation. It is a trio. And Ryan Keberle and Catharsis will return to the Cooperage Project in Honesdale, Main Street, this Saturday, May 2nd, for a night of jazz. He will be joined by Camila Meza. And Jorge Roder, who is a spectacular bassist. They have chemistry and they make remarkable music together, and they will be at the Cooperage Project this Saturday, May 2nd, for a night of jazz. 7 o'clock is the start time. The Cooperage Project is on Main Street in Honesdale. Music of Ryan Keberle and Catharsis, the Cooperage Project, Main Street in Honesdale, this Saturday, May 2nd, for a night of jazz at 7 o'clock. That's the start time. For more information, thecooperageproject.org, thecooperageproject.org. And to learn more about Ryan Keberle, you can check his website. It's simply ryankeberle.com, R-Y-A-N. KEBERLE.com, RyanKeberle.com.